Now it's so different when the tape is rolling, right?
Yeah.
But what I need to do first is say hello to Steve Roberts and to Maggie Victor, an unexpected but welcomed guest. And welcome to Orlando and to WKIS.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Nice being here.
Oh, good. We want to make sure that you were there. Well, we're talking about computing across America. And it sounds so technical, but really it's a lot of fun, and it's something that's very different, an adventure that Steve started on some time ago. Steve, tell me, when did you start on this adventure?
1983. I sold my house and moved to a bicycle.
Oh, goodness. That is so outrageous. Did you have what many of us feel is the American dream, a nice, comfortable life?
Well, on the surface, I'm sure I looked like that. I had a three-bedroom ranch home in suburban Columbus, Ohio, on an acre, and I had a riding lawnmower and a car and a room, living room full of books and so on. And the whole system looked like the American dream. Of course, the reality was that I was a struggling freelance writer working my tail off to pay for the monthly bills, which were amounting to what I suppose is typical for people these days, about $2,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere after doing that for a few years, I started realizing that there were some very big inconsistencies between calling myself a freelance writer and being chained to my desk so badly, you know, working so hard to afford the things that I didn't even want. So I was, the situation was very ripe for some kind of a change. I had lots of dreams of escape and travel.
And then you made all of those dreams come true.
That's right. In 1983, the technologies all came together that allowed me to put a portable computer on a recumbent bicycle, run it with solar panels, and use computer networks for all my communication. And the essential purpose of all of that was to be able to take my freelancing business on the road and have it not matter where in the country I am.
Did you leave a family behind, or were you by yourself at that time?
No, I was single at that time and was just living alone in this big old house in Ohio, and it didn't feel like much of a sacrifice.
Did this come to you in a dream? You know, like, was it all of a sudden? Or was it something that developed over a period of time?
I was sort of like a supersaturated solution waiting for some kind of a shock to cause crystallization to occur. And that shock, that event, was meeting a fellow named Robbie McCormick out on the roads west of Columbus, Ohio. I was out bike riding with a friend of mine one day, and I saw this bizarre contraption approaching from behind. And it was a low-slung bicycle, a recumbent. And this fellow was about 65. He'd had his back broken three times, and in 3 years he'd put 18,000 miles on this bicycle, which was the most comfortable thing he'd ever ridden. And I looked at that, and he let me ride it, and he let me borrow it. And, well, by the end of the evening, I had realized that all of these latent ideas were starting to happen. Something was sort of fomenting in my brain like a little revolution. And by 3 o'clock that morning, I mean literally during the same period of wakefulness, I went out and planted a for sale sign in my front yard.
And that was it?
That was it. Six months later, I left.
My goodness. Now, what does it take to just reject everything, to say no to everything that had become so common and familiar and, you know, run-of-the-mill, and say, all right, this is it, I'm going to do it? Did you have a lot of opposition from friends? Did a lot of people tell you, Steve, you're going off the deep one. Your elevator is stuck in the basement, Steve. You know, what kind of reaction did you get?
Well, there are two questions there. Well, first of all, what it takes is passion. And there no amount of logistical planning and bottom line oriented business planning could have caused this to occur as it did. What it took was absolute passion, you know, obsession.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you really want to do, it becomes very easy to do it. If it's something you think you should do, that's a different story. As to reactions from friends and family, my mother's first reaction was, what's the matter, Steve? You're going to be a bum all your life. And I had reactions from friends, of course, varied all over the map. Some said, oh, I'll give you a week to get over it. You're crazy, and this is just another wild idea you've got. Some people, of course, instantly recognized the dream, and their eyes would light up and go, yeah, that sounds great. Do it, do it.
So, yeah, do it, do it. Do the thing that I know I'll never be able to do, but it's so nice to live vicariously,
mm-hmm.
and watch someone else fulfill a dream.
I think that's why I was so fortunate in having help from so many people. When I look at that bicycle now, I see 4 or 5 years of friendships reflected in it in one way or another. Friend Glenn Glassner in Columbus working with me to build power supplies and help with aluminum work, and you know, just all these people who wanted to contribute in some way other than just kind of standing there and watching me leave, is saying, well, hey, let me build this little widget for you. I've got a milling machine, you know, and so on. So I had lots of help like that.
And all of those parts that you can take with you, it's like taking your friends with you when you go. You're not really so very far away from them.
Yeah. It looks like a solo odyssey, but it's not. There's a, you know, well, in the front of my book, I've got something like 4 or 5 pages of credits, you know, from people who helped in all sorts of ways.
Now, about this first bike, describe it for us. Tell us what it had.
Well, we can sort of do that as a continuum. There is only one bike, but it started in a fairly simple way. It didn't look simple at the time. In fact, one of the first questions I got on the road was from an old farmer out in western Ohio who walked over as I was uploading text through a payphone. At the time, I was using CompuServe. I was hunkered down on the pavement, uploading through the little computer with the bike and the solar panels gleaming in the sun. And this old guy in Christiansburg, Ohio, walked over and looked at me for a while, finally spat tobacco juice and said, "Are you with NASA?"
Mm.
Well...
Why did he say that like it's a dirty word?
Well, at that time, the bike was simply an 18-speed recumbent bicycle, 8 feet long. I ride in a semi-reclining position with the handlebars under the seat. There was a small solar panel on it, 5 watts worth. It charged a battery, and that battery was used to run a security system, a CB, which was culturally useless but occasionally entertaining. My lights and my portable computer. And back in 83, the laptop computer I used was the little Radio Shack Model 100. Now, of course, as technology developed, I got very frustrated with a little 32K workspace and wanted a real machine, so I switched to the Hewlett-Packard Portable Plus. And that's been my system ever since. I keep on adding to it, so it now has a megabyte of memory. But the big difference that's happened, if I'm not getting too far ahead of us here, somewhere, I think around 6,000 or 7,000 miles into the trip, I was on this bike. I was riding through West Texas in July, and I was thinking about all those ideas that I have when I'm on the road. I mean, and real turns of phrase. I mean, articles write themselves in my head when I'm pedaling, and they always just evaporate. You know, just like cooking smells, they're just gone. And I always promise myself that at the end of the day, I'll sit down and write this wonderful article, and it never happens, of course.
Because they're gone.
They're gone, and I'm tired, and I'm meeting people, and, you know, whatever. So in West Texas one day, with nothing to do but pedal and pedal and pedal, I thought, wait a minute, all I need is a little keyboard in the handlebars and a little screen in front of me, and I can write while riding. And so I thought about that idea for a while and finally executed it. And the bike now allows me to type while I'm riding at about 30 words a minute with a handlebar.
A new idea was born.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so there are now 5 computers in the machine. I still have the Hewlett-Packard Portable Plus, which is still my main system, but I can't use that while pedaling. So when I'm on the road, it's luggage. But when I'm on the road, there are 4 other computers that work together to let me write and do data communications and other things that we'll get into. But sort of an electronic cottage on wheels now.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me is that so many of us confined to our, you know, 4 walls of workspace and exposed to a computer on a daily basis don't think very much of it. And we know that we can communicate back and forth with people in other cities with no problem, and you never think about it. But how do you communicate with people all over the country, all throughout the day, as you are pedaling along? You know, what sort of technology have you employed to make that type of communication possible?
Okay, there are 2 things going on there. The first and the most important from my business standpoint is the Genie computer network. And that is something I access daily as a matter of routine, either through a payphone with a little acoustic coupler or preferably through somebody's modular phone jack, which is generally easier. It's a large national, I guess international network that connects, I don't know how many thousand now, probably somewhere around 50,000 personal computer users. And I have 2 major classes of use for that. One is that's all my business traffic goes through that. I have an office in North Carolina and publishers here and there. For example, I do a column for 73 Magazine now, and I can write an article for 73 Magazine, be right on deadline, call up Genie, transmit the article into their mailbox address, and then they, I mean, it's just standard electronic mail. I mean, it's very familiar to a lot of people. I just do it while I'm traveling around the country. Now, I can't do that while I'm pedaling. Okay, so, one more thing about Genie. I also publish an electronic column there called CAA for Computing Across America. And at the moment, there are 41 chapters of adventure stories that have happened after the book was published, and another 15 or so chapters of technical articles and things like that describing how the bike works. I keep those in separate areas. as a result of my daily presence on the network, it's also become a key part of my social life. I have a lot of very close friends I've never met face-to-face, but I feel like I know them very well, brain-to-brain.
Yes.
And that's one of the themes that pervades the book, is the electronic romances, the friendships that sort of transcend time and space. So that's my major networking link, is Genie. Now, in addition, and very recently, I've added packet data communication, which is a subset of the ham radio world. And that's kind of a link between personal computer networking and ham radio. It all happens via the airwaves. So now, while I'm pedaling, I can write a message, transmit it into a radio-linked bulletin board system, and fire it off through this network of bulletin boards that are tied together by ham radio, and do electronic mail that way. It's not as immediate as Genie, and it's I wouldn't consider it quite as reliable yet, but the beauty of it is there's no corporate substrate, and the entire network consists of these sort of ad hoc nodes that people decide to build in their basement. And that allows me to do networking while I'm actually on the road. So I can think about my parents, for example, and create a message and send it through the national traffic system while pedaling down the street. Or I communicated with a guy in Sweden while I was pedaling between Palo Alto and Menlo Park one day, and so on.
Well, you have to be very coordinated to do that, too. And do you stay away from high traffic areas? Is that
yes,
important?
But not for that reason.
Well, just to keep from being run over, mm-hmm. I suppose. But is that necessary also for the equipment to work properly, or will it function just as well whether you're within the city limits or if you're out on the, you know, high country?
The equipment doesn't have much of a sense about what's going on around it. There's a little green light on the console that says OK, and when the processor's alive, the little green light blinks about once per second. It's kind of self-testing things. And I can be in the worst imaginable circumstances, in a heavy traffic jam, in a bumpy road, in the rain, and the little green light's going, okay, okay. And of course, I'm not saying that at all. I'm muttering all sorts of horrible things that I can't repeat here. But no, the computers really don't care about any of that. What affects it is my own ability to multitask my brain. On a rather non-invasive country road pedaling along, the act of pedaling and the act of typing occupy such different parts of my brain that there's no confusion between them, and I can
you've effectively separated that.
Oh, it's easy. Yeah, it's
okay.
So I can maintain a 30 word a minute text flow or something like that without any problem. As I have to start thinking about interruptions and people trying to run over me and things like that, I find that I'm not quite as interested in using the computer. I'm more interested in staying alive.
Most definitely.
Yeah. I like to joke that I should have a file in the computer called lastwords.txt, and if I ever have an accident, I can open that file and type something like, ah!
Well, tell me, how did you decide on your route?
I used to say whim, women, and weather, but 10,000 miles into the trip, I fell in love with Maggie, and 3 weeks later, I asked her if she wanted to go for a bike ride, and she said yes, and I told her to quit her job, sell her car, trash her lifestyle, and hit the road with me, and that's what happened. So now I have to say just whim and weather. Actually, there's another answer to that. We maintain a hospitality database on one of the computers, which consists of invitations and contacts with people all over the country. Since, especially through the networks, I've had so much communication, and it's so easy for readers to respond to my articles with letters just right there. Just they read an article and instantly give me feedback. Many of those have invitations associated with them. And so as I travel, I save all of those, and then I can access them by city or county or whatever. And that often determines our route.
Okay. Now, you've made how many trips since 1983?
Well, I like to think of it as one continuous trip with lots of random layovers ranging from a day to a year. The longest layover was... the longest layover was a year, and that's when I rebuilt the whole bike and finished writing the book and things like that. More typical layovers are a month or two, and that's just, we might meet somebody and make friends with them and stay for a while. I think we stayed 5 months in Palo Alto building some new electronics.
So your lifestyle is very different from my day-to-day lifestyle of just going to work and going home and making a trip to the bank once every 2 weeks. How do you manage your money and you eat and sleep and everything on these layovers?
We're the homeless and unemployed you hear about.
You look pretty good to me.
Well, it just depends. I don't see a layover as being any different from being on the road, because the nature of all of my communications remains the same. I still do everything through Jeannie. I still have the office in North Carolina that takes care of all money and management and communications. So basically my job is to travel, have adventures, and write stories and put out business fires and make deals and things like that. And it doesn't really matter where I am when I do that. So a layover is simply very slow travel.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Florida. I noticed in your book and the map that you have when you first open up the book that shows all mm-hmm. of the strange and sundry little places that you visited. it seems as though that you've spent a great majority of your time in Florida, and you've done some crisscrossing back and forth across the state. What is that all about?
Well, all those crisscrosses intersect in Gainesville, and I had a girlfriend there on my first trip. And so that tends to affect the course of my travels a little bit. Really, the motivation for being in Florida that much time was weather, and I was also having a lot of adventures and romances, and was fine. I was traveling alone, and it was real hard to get excited about heading off into the lands west of here, which seemed at the time to be quite a bit less exciting than beach cultures. So it was winter, and the rest of the country was freezing, and why leave in a hurry?
You know? No, yeah, I agree with you. This is the place to be, for
now,
sure.
See, the thing is, there's a real important observation that I made during that first trip, and it governs a lot of my travels now, and that is that if you think too much about where you're going, you lose respect for where you are. And that kind of became a theme of the book. And I have met many cyclists who wander around the country. Well, they don't wander around the country. They're blasting across the country, obsessed with getting from one end of it to the other in some number of days.
And adding up miles and things like that, and missing out on all of the good stuff in between.
Sure. If you're in a hurry, a bicycle's a terrible vehicle. So I love the travel, and I love cycling, and I see no reason to go jamming cross country so fast that all I remember is pain and white lines on the road and confused rest stops and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So, well, tell me, how big is the bike?
The bike itself is 8 feet long, and it pulls a trailer now, and the trailer adds another 4 feet to it. So here's this 12-foot long human-powered machine. It has 54 speeds. It weighs 275 pounds. It has disc brakes. And as I mentioned, the keyboard is in the handlebars under the seat, so I'm riding, and just like being on a comfortable lawn chair on wheels, you know, leaning back, hands down at my sides, steering with a sort of pivoting motion, typing with my fingertips, braking with my whole hand, and shifting with the sort of the heel of my hand. And then there are two 10-watt solar panels from SolarX. One's up in the front above the control console. And I should mention that out in front of me there is a control panel that has, I think I counted them once, it stunned me. It was like 165 lights, switches, displays, and things like that. One of the most common comments on the street is that it looks like an aircraft console. That is the box it's the front of the box that contains four computers that all work together to do various things. The top of that is a clear plastic fairing that makes the whole thing slipperier aerodynamically and keeps the rain off it. I've ridden in some very heavy rain before, and the computers just sit there and go, okay, okay.
While you melt.
They're happy, yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. And let's see, what else? So they're packs. Of course, there's some practical things that have nothing to do with electronics. We also carry a tent, sleeping bags, clothes, food, computers, a full ham radio station, a flute, juggling balls, all the basic essentials.
Is that in the trailer?
Yes.
Okay. Now that you have a lovely companion to accompany you, where is she?
She's right here beside me.
Well, I know she's beside you now, but when you're on the road, is she in the trailer?
No.
Okay.
Part of the deal is she has to pedal herself up those hills. I mean, love is one thing, but toting is something else.
Does she have her own bike?
Maggie, you tell it.
Yes, I have my own bicycle, and it's a recumbent bicycle as well with the trailer behind it. And I have a solar panel that keeps the battery charged to run the ham radio and the lights. And I carry most of the food. I'm the lifestyle maintenance manager. And
that's a very impressive title.
Yeah, I like it. Actually, it's not a bad job.
And you did the same thing that Steve did. You gave it all up for mm-hmm. a life of adventure mm-hmm. and fun and travel.
Well, I had been working in one place for 6 years and was growing tired with that anyway. So when I met Steve and he said, well, you want to go for a bike ride? I thought, yeah, it sounds like fun. I'm ready.
Was this something that you had been doing all along? And when you met up with him, it just blossomed into something bigger?
Well, no, it was my first bicycle tour. And
wow.
But I wanted to, you know, be active and meet people and get out in the world anyway. And met Steve, and he gave me the perfect opportunity to do just that.
Well, congratulations. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful. Steve, before we run out of time, let me ask you if this bicycle will be marketed.
Not as such. I've recently been approached by a company that is interested in manufacturing recumbent bicycles on a large scale, and I may have something to do with that. That's kind of an interesting possibility. In the past, I've tried to avoid things like that because every time I turn a hobby into a business, it ruins the hobby. And my bottom line is fun, so that's always kind of tragic when that occurs. I used to just love computer design, so I started a company doing computer design, and before long, I was staying up all night for customers, not for fun. So I don't want that to happen with bicycling, but if it's structured properly, then it's quite possible. Now, there are other companies making recumbent bicycles. You know, that long bicycle is certainly not unique to me. And they can be bought now for anywhere from $500 to $2,000.
Oh, okay.
But if we do manufacture bicycles, they certainly won't be all computerized. I don't think there's a huge market for that.
No? Well, there's so many people in your network, I would think that they, you know, would want to...
They don't want to sell their houses? And
oh, now that's the catch. Okay.
Right. Well, it's a major lifestyle change.
It is, it is. And you have to be, well, not dead. I was going to say dedicated, but that's not it. It's the passion.
Exactly.
It's that burning desire to fulfill a dream and to do something different.
Well, it's just like learning. I dropped out of college halfway through freshman year, and I'm self-taught in computers and writing and all these things. And the reason is that passion and curiosity are much stronger motivators than fear of tests and responsibility and all these things that our parents teach us are supposed values. If you're extremely excited about something, you're going to learn it very quickly, very efficiently. You'll throw yourself into it and become good at it. Okay. If you're doing something because somebody tells you you have to, it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. It doesn't have, it doesn't offer the same drive at all.
Exactly.
But now about the book. It's been published now for, and on the market
less
for
than
how
2 months.
Less than 2 months.
Yeah, it's published by Learned Information of Medford, New Jersey. It's called Computing Across America, subtitled The Bicycle Odyssey of a High-Tech Nomad. And the we've been moving it as we've been traveling around the country. They can be ordered. In fact, autographed copies can be ordered from my office in North Carolina. And that's 1013 Warren Avenue, Cary, C-A-R-Y, North Carolina, 27511, for $10 plus $2 for shipping and handling. And we occasionally do drop shipments of books to places that we're going, and then I'll stop and sign them and ship them from there. At some point, that may become a little bit too much work, but at the moment, we're happy to do that for people who are interested in this.
Well, you know what? I have to recommend the book. I think that the title and the subtitle are just a little misleading, and I think anybody who takes the time to purchase the book and to read it will be very, very pleasantly surprised. The book is warm. It's personable. It's full of life and experiences and involvement with people from all over the country, and I found it to be really exciting and so flavorful. And I think people are going to really enjoy it. It's full of spice, the real spice of life. And it's not anywhere near as technical as I had envisioned it would be. It is a great adventure. And I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you very much.
But thank you both for being here with me today. It's a pleasure to see you and meet you in person, and I feel like I've been all across America.
Well, you want to go with us?
Oh, I don't know if my husband would go for that. But can you deliver babies?
Well, I haven't tried, but, you know, it's... I get
that
it.
Could be the beginning of a new book.
I'm sure.
Okay. I don't know. But thank you both so much for being here. I hope you enjoy your stay in the state of Florida, and I know you'll enjoy life wherever you go all over the world. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.